Okay, in relation to the eighth commandment tonight, I'm going to quote from the larger catechism once again. And these two questions are important and answers are quite important and very significant. And there are so many things that we have to think about and consider. And very unfortunately, I don't think I have given those questions answers to you, except questions, in fact. But without giving you answers, and answers are the, you know, I'll just read them out. Number 141, what are the duties required in the Eighth Commandment? Eighth Commandment is about stealing, thou shalt not steal. So, what are the duties required in the Eighth Commandment? Answer is, the duties required in the Eighth Commandment are truth, faithfulness, and justice in contracts and commerce between man and man. Rendering to everyone his due, restitution of goods unlawfully detained from the right owners thereof, giving and lending freely according to our abilities and the necessities of others, moderation of our judgments, wills, and affections concerning worldly goods, a provident care and study to get, keep, use, and dispose these things which are necessary and convenient for the sustentation of our nature and the suitable to our condition, a lawful calling, and diligence in it, frugality, avoiding unnecessary lawsuits, and suretyship, or other like engagements, and on endeavor by all just and lawful means to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of others as well as our own. So you have learned it well, right? What are the sins forbidden in the Eighth Commandment? Question number 142. The answer is this. The sins forbidden in the Eighth Commandment, besides the neglect of the duties required, are theft, robbery, man-stealing, and receiving anything that is stolen, fraudulent dealing, false weights and measures, removing landmarks, injustice and unfaithfulness, in contracts between man and man, or in matters of trust, oppression, extortion, usury, bribery, vexatious lawsuits, unjust enclosures and depopulations, engrossing commodities to hence the price, unlawful calling, and all other unjust or sinful ways of taking or withholding from our neighbor what belongs to him, or of enriching ourselves, covetousness, inordinate prizing, and affecting worldly goods, distrustful and distracting cares and studies in getting, keeping, and using them, envying at the prosperity of others, as likewise idleness, prodigality, wasteful gaming, and all other ways whereby we do unduly prejudice our own outward estate and defrauding ourselves of the due use and comfort of that estate which God hath given us. Oh, my answer is very long. I have checked Wikipedia and found a few interesting facts about thefts in England and Wales. In England and Wales, a theft is a statutory offence, creation by Section 1 of the Theft Act 1968, which provides, in quote, a person is guilty of theft if he dishonestly appropriates property belonging to another with the intention of permanently depriving the other of it, and thief and steal shall be construed accordingly, end of quote. This offense replaces the former offenses of larceny, embezzlement, and fraudulent conversion. Section 3 of this act provides, in quote, any assumption by a person of the rights of an owner amounts to an appropriation, and this includes where he has come by the property, innocently or not, without stealing it, and the later assumption of a right to it by keeping or dealing with it as owner. Where property or a right or interest in property is or purpose to be transferred for value to a person acting in good faith, no later assumption by him of rights which he believed himself to be acquiring shall, by reason of any defect in the transfer's title, amount to theft or theft of the property. End of quote. they are just legal codes about thefts or thievery. Of course, beyond the explanations we have heard so far, there are even more and complicated explanations and implications related to this particular commandment, not to steal. There are many forms of theft, and some of them are uniquely modern, in fact. We may talk about stolen goods and properties, but there are also stolen identities against which insurance services are provided, credit fraud, shoplifts, stolen ears, or even stolen generation. There is such a term, stolen generation. Australian Aborigines children were systematically removed from their homes and sent to various institutions to be brought up as Australians without claiming their heritages from their forefathers. So whole generation is missing. Now a few decades have been passed, they are coming out and calling themselves as a stolen generation. As we can see, stealing is widely practiced and recognized in our societies, and it is important for us to uphold the commandment of God, not only for the honor of God, but also for our benefits and for our happiness in this world. So let us think about the eighth commandment concerning stealing. First of all, let me have some preliminary observations in relation to the commandment. John Calvin said that the purport of intention of this commandment is because injustice is an abomination to God. That's the intention behind this commandment. So injustice is an abomination of God. What he says has, in fact, a lot of implications. And let me think about a few implications from his definition, his explanation of the commandment. First, we must recognize that it is God who gives us possessions. It is God who has given us possessions. Is it significant? I think it is a very significant point for us to recognize. It is quite amusing to think that God is concerned about thieveries, our thefts, our stealing. If what we have is ours, then why stealing is God's business? It belongs to me. I have my own ownership over certain things, and someone has stolen some part of my mine, and why God is so upset about that? Why God has to make a commandment for us not to steal others' things? If what we have is ours, why does God show his displeasure toward the ones who steal things from us? Ownership is on us. We have to be upset. And why, God? Our possessions are ours, aren't they? However, it is very clear that it is God who commands us not to steal and brings consequences against any person who steals from others. It indicates that though we own our private properties, it is God who has given them to us. Even though it seems that on its surface, ownership is ours. However, beyond that, it is God who has given that ownership to us. It indicates that though we own our private properties, eventually it is God who has enabled us to have that ownership. In a sense, it is a claim of God's ownership of all things according to his sovereign distribution. Deuteronomy 10 verse 18 says, "He doth execute the judgment of the fatherless and the widow, and loveth the stranger in giving him food and raiment." It is God who gives these people food and raiment. Proverbs 10 verse 22 says, "The blessing of the Lord in maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it." So he says it is God who blesses individuals to be even rich. Hosea chapter 2 verse 8 says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold which they prepared for Baal." God is talking about rebellious Israel. And he says, she does not know that I am the one who has given all those necessary provisions to her. Leviticus 19 verse 10 says, "Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and stranger. I am the Lord your God." Deuteronomy 15 verse 7 says, "If there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother." There are recognitions of the divine ownership of everything. Therefore, Psalm 104 testifies of the creation by God. And Psalm 104 verse 24 says this, "O Lord, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches." God's divine ownership by creation. The very thought of God's ownership of all things and His gracious and sovereign distributions of them justify the displeasure of God against stealing. Second, this very commandment supports and guarantees the private ownership. That is a very fascinating concept, private ownership, or individuals' rights to possess their own private properties. What we must pay attention to is that the right to own is a divine appointment. It is God who has given those things to individuals, and individuals have their right to own their private properties. Thus, the right to own is a divine appointment. This is a right provided and given by the Lord Himself. Therefore, stealing is not only an offense against the stolen, but also against God's divine appointment. Of course, private ownership is a gift from God. Therefore, the process by which we own things must be able to reflect the character of the Lord. It means that the ends cannot and should not justify the means. If we believe that the one who dispenses the wealth to his people is God himself, then we also need to know that the ways or means we use to acquire our possessions must be in accordance with the ways of God. Individuals' right to own property refutes any idea of communism or class conflicts as Marxism has brainwashed so many people. Third, we need to see that legal acquisition does not necessarily mean righteous acquisition. Though what we have done in order to own something is all legal, it is very possible that the law itself is either flawed or malpracticed. We all know and understand that craftsmen always try to find ways to justify their wrongs. It is not too hard to find examples for both cases. In the Bible, we know that there was a very evil queen. Her name was Queen Jezebel. She took a vineyard from Naboth for her husband, King Ahab. There are many examples in our days. So this Queen Jezebel brought all kinds of false accusations against Naboth through the testimonies given by the wicked people. Eventually, Naboth was killed, and Ahab was able to take the vineyard from his hands. There are a lot of examples in our days. For example, it has been known that, the late Colonel Gaddafi had accrued a lot of assets during his reign, and no one dared to challenge the legitimacy of his ownership. But after he's gone, now we hear different verdicts, and I'm sure that all of his possessions will be confiscated, both in his home country and from abroad. Evil government may appropriate things illegally, but it's justified under its own unrighteous justice system. Another example is that man is prone to pervert the justice in order to appropriate what he wants. People sarcastically have said, with money, not guilty, but without money, guilty. In fact, such practice is not modern at all. That's why the Lord knew the problem and provided the prescription for his people in Exodus chapter 23, verse 6. Thou shalt not wrest the judgment of thy people in his cause. Thou shalt not wrest the judgment. The word wrest means to pervert, to bend, stretch, or even deny. That is the meaning of it. Simply, someone is poor, do not bend the justice against that person. And obviously, the same rule must be applied to the other side. We are not supposed to bend the justice simply because someone is rich or wealthy. I cannot but mention that the purpose of the law is to love our neighbors just like ourselves. If we are to be true to the spirit of the law of God, behind every accusation, the spirit of the law must be demonstrated. If we acquire something with a purpose to injure our neighbors, though we have done everything legally and honestly, our intention is sinful, because the reason that we appropriate certain things is to injure our neighbors, and we are against the purpose of the law. So these are some preliminary thoughts. And what are the implications we can find from the Eighth Commandment? Well, there are many things we may have to consider. Out of many further considerations, I would like to bring, first of all, a point once again related to the purpose of the law of God. What is the purpose? As we know, the purpose of the law is to love our neighbors as ourselves. Therefore, if we are not doing our duties in order for our neighbors not to have things they need, we are breaking the commandment. In other words, the Eighth Commandment must be understood and interpreted in the light of the whole law. We must not defraud our neighbors in order to hurt them. Second, we need to understand this commandment from broader and more extensive perspectives. What we must not steal is not just money or things. We must approach this matter from God's perspectives concerning man. Man is the crown of God's creation, and therefore, his dignity must be upheld and honored and respected as a person. He has the image of God, therefore human dignity must be upheld. That dignity must not be removed from him. Man is the crown of God's creation. Man is the person who has the image of God. Therefore, when we treat people, we must be able to see the dignity. We must be able to show. We must be able to our right attitude toward the dignity that that person has. We must be able to respect that person. Every right belonged to that person as God's precious creature must be protected. We do not have right to humiliate the people. We do not have any right to remove somebody's dignity from him. Thus, all persecutions and oppressions must be removed and excluded from our behaviors. It must include any threats against other people. God commands us, there are a lot of examples. God commands us not to oppress strangers, for example. Exodus 22, verse 21 says, Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Strangers are trying to settle in and make their life in our midst, and we are not to oppress them. Their rights must be honored. When we have business transactions, we are to be honest without cheating others. Leviticus 25 verse 14 says, "And if thou sell out unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, ye shall not oppress wrong one another." Oh, it's interesting. Leviticus 25 verse 14 says, "And if thou sell aught unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, ye shall not oppress one another." Ye shall not oppress. That oppress means do not do wrong things against your neighbor. I had only one experience to buy up a house. And I never knew how people chose their houses. And there were house inspections, and so I visited some houses for inspections. And I found one house tremendously beautiful. And I thought that was a beautiful house, and I asked my friend to come along and look at it. And he was looking around, and he said, "Oh, it's not good." So I said, "Why you are saying it's not good? Perfectly beautiful." And he said, "There are too many cosmetics done." So I thought, "What are you talking about? Cosmetics on the building?" And he said, "Yeah, can't you see there? There are all cracks. But for house inspection, just to sell the house, cosmetic work was done. And then repainted on the top of it. But sooner or later, there will be cracks shown. And in fact, I remember one particular house. He said, "If you are really desperate to buy any house, buy this. But you have to be willing to rebuild the house within a few years. It is because everything that you see here is a work of cosmetics, building cosmetics." Well, isn't that terrible? We are not to oppress one another. Leviticus 25 verse 17 says, "Ye shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God, for I am the Lord your God." We are not to oppress the hired workers. Deuteronomy 24 verse 14 says, "Thou shalt not oppress an hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in thy land within thy gates." Simply because someone is working for me, under me, that doesn't mean that his dignity has to be despised. We are not to oppress the poor. Proverbs 22 verse 22 says, "Rob not the poor because he's poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate." Someone may be poor, but poverty does not remove his dignity from him. He is a person, again, with the image of God. We are not to oppress the vulnerable ones in the society. Zechariah chapter 7 verse 10 says, "And oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor, and let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart." God shows his displeasures against the oppressors. Malachi chapter 3 verse 5 says, "And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and against the false swearers and against those that oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right. And fear not me, saith the Lord God, saith the Lord of hosts." And God shows his displeasures against the oppressors. And God honors who are looking after others for their needs. It is the true spirit of the commandment, in fact. Thou shalt not steal. That is not simply a negative commandment so that our behaviors will be curbed and somehow limited and bound by this commandment by not stealing only. But in fact, behind the commandment, that means actively protect others' rights and others' properties. That positive implication is implied in this commandment. So not stealing from someone else is not good enough. We must be actively helping others to provide their needs, and their rights must be well honored. Leviticus 25 verse 35 says, "If thy brother be waxen poor and fallen in decay with thee, then thou shalt relieve him, yea, though he be a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with thee." Deuteronomy chapter 22 verses 1 to 4 even talks about meeting others' needs or looking after someone when he is in difficulties. It says this, Deuteronomy 20. Would you like to read the verse? Deuteronomy 22 verses 1 to 4. Deuteronomy chapter 22 verses 1 to 4. Let's read it. "Thou shalt not see thy neighbor's ox or his sheep go astray, and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt in any case bring them again unto thy brother. And if thy brother be not nigh unto thee, or if thou know him not, then thou shalt bring it unto thine own house, and it shall be with thee until thy brother seek after it. And thou shalt restore it to him again. In the like manner shalt thou do with his ass, so that thou do with his raiment, and with all lost things which he hath lost, and thou hast found, shalt thou do likewise. Thou mayest not hide thyself. Thou shalt not see thy neighbor's ass or his ox fall down by the way, and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt surely help him to lift them up again." Man, so my neighbor's animal is going astray, and I'm not supposed to just ignore it. I'm supposed to take care of that animal for the sake of my brother, just in case if I do not know the owner of that animal, then I'm supposed to keep it until rightful owner comes and reclaims the ownership of that animal. Philippians chapter 2 verse 4 says, "Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." That is the positive side of the 8th commandment. We are not only looking after our own needs, but we need to pay attention to the needs of other people. Galatians chapter 6 verse 10 says, "As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith." We must provide the needs of our brethren. Though this point may be a repetition of the previous point, I would like to separate this point from the previous one, because I think it is an important point for us to recognize, and we need to practice it. I want you to read a few verses here. James chapter 2, verses 15 to 16. James chapter 2, James chapter 2, verses 15 to 16. Let's read it. "If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and any of you say unto them, Depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit?" Amen. So when someone is coming to us in desperate needs, and that person does not have anything to eat, then we say to him, "Well, why you are not eating? Please eat," without giving him anything to eat. That is a mockery. And we are supposed to provide that person's needs. And likewise, that person may not have any clothing in winter season, and we are saying, "You look terribly cold. Too bad. If you do not, you know, have more layers of clothes, you may catch a cold. So don't do that. You know, that's a stupid thing to do." Well, if we see the needs of that individual, then we are too. Provide his needs. And 1 John chapter 3 verse 17. 1 John chapter 3 verse 17. Okay. And let's read it. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? And that's a beautiful side of the eighth commandment. Not only we are not stealing things from our brothers, but also we are to actively provide the things for those ones who are in need. When we are talking about human dignity, we cannot but say against the human trafficking and modern day slaveries, we must steal. We must not steal others' freedom and their human rights. You know, not too long ago, I read a book about modern day slavery, and it is quite sad that how many people are suffering under so called modern day slaveries. And how many people are being sold as if they are just products and goods. And all those things must be opposed, and we should oppose to such inhumane activities. Third, this commandment also teaches us about work ethics. I'm sure that there are many areas we may have to consider. If an employee wastes and squanders the substance of his employer, he's breaking this commandment. Quite often it is true that when we realize that something does not belong to us, but we have a right to use, we tend to abuse that opportunity. As a result, we are wasting. That is against the commandment. If an employee does not pay attention to the proper management over the things entrusted with him, obviously he's breaking the commandment. If an employee diverges and leaks the secrets of his employer's business, he's breaking the commandment. There is a breach of the commandment. If an employee does not show due respect to his employer, it is also a breach of the commandment. On the other hand, if an employer despises and humiliates his employee, he is breaking the commandment. If an employer does not give his hired worker his due wages, then he is breaking the commandment. James 5 verse 4 says, "Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you, kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." So employer should not keep the wages from the hired workers. Whatever duties and responsibilities in our workplaces must be done. If we fail to do them, in fact, we are breaking our commandments, the commandments, eighth commandments. And I think at this point we may extend the application of this commandment to the government and those people who are in authorities, rulers and kings and so on. The ones in authorities must do their very best to preserve and protect their countrymen. And also they are responsible for fair executions of the law of the country and for promotion of the welfare of their people by securing the national security, protecting the poor, punishing the evil, and making righteous rules and the laws. In the meanwhile, the citizens are responsible to respect the ones in authorities and to pray for them. That is what God wants us to do. If we apply this commandment even further, it will be applicable to husband and wife, parents and children, and pastors and their congregation. Fourth, restitution must be included in this commandment. Thou shalt not steal. When we steal something from others and realize that what we have done was wrong, then we are not only sorry for what we have done, but also responsible to bring the stolen goods back to the owner. Restitution is an important part of this commandment. How often we say sorry, as if that is the final answer to all our wrongs and problems. But there has to be a restitution. And here, Leviticus chapter 6 is an interesting chapter because Leviticus chapter 6 is talking about a trespass offering. And chapter 5, there is a sin offering. And chapter 4 must be a part of sin offering as well. Let me just quickly check. Chapter 4 is a sin offering, and it continues, and then there is a trespass offering at the end of chapter 5, and chapter 6, there is an aspect of trespass offering in the first part of chapter 6. And trespass offering and sin offering, both offerings are supposed to be offered for sins or transgressions against the law of God, against God. However, if there is any difference between sin sacrifice and trespass sacrifice, is that trespass offering includes restitution. Restitution. So, Leviticus chapter 6, verses 2 to 5 says this. If a sower sin and commit a trespass against the Lord, and lie unto his neighbor in that which was delivered him to keep, or in fellowship, or in a thing taken away by violence, or hath deceived his neighbor, or hath found that which was lost, and lieth concerning it, and sweareth falsely, in any of all these that a man doeth, sinning therein, then it shall be because he hath sinned and is guilty that he shall restore that which he took violently away, or the thing which he hath deceitfully gotten, or that which was delivered him to keep, or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he hath sworn falsely, he shall even restore it in the principal. So whatever he has wronged, whatever he has stolen from others, so principle must be restored, and shall add the fifth part thereunto. So on the top of the principle, 20% of it must be added to it, and give it unto him to whom it appertaineth in the day of his trespass offering. So restoration includes fine as well. So not only being sorry for his trespasses, he must restore the original thing, stolen item, on the top of it, 20% of its value must be added to his restoration. That's the fine. That's why Luke chapter 19 verse 8 talks about Zacchaeus, something like this. Zacchaeus said in Luke chapter 19 verse 8, said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. Four times I will pay back to that person. Psalm 37 verse 21 says, The wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. So restoration must be included in this commandment. Thou shalt not steal. Fifth, positively speaking, this commandment teaches us to be honest and lawful in all our transactions and our dealings. Such a positive lesson will cancel the negative behaviors. For example, though we are longing to obtain something, we will not attempt to get it forcibly, violently, or illegally. The growth of our wealth and possessions will not be the top of our priority list, but instead we will live and behave ourselves based on principles. We will not desire to heap our wealth by letting others bleed for us, though the means we are employing are all legal. If our gain injures our neighbors, we must have a second thought. If we render our utmost service to the employers, then we are required to be faithful. Then lastly, let us think about biblical commands in relation to the eighth commandment. First of all, the Bible warns us of the danger of greed. Money is a necessity. We need money. And there is no person who can live above the necessity of money. In order to buy food, we need money. In order to educate our children, we need money. In order to travel, we need money. In order to get some things to wear, we need money. So it is a necessity. However, necessity can become a sinful object sometimes when there is a sense and presence of greed. It is something that we have to think about often, and we need to look into ourselves and see whether we are greedy or not. The fact of the matter is that however greedy we are, the things that we have been able to add up in our account will not be taken out when we have to depart from this life into eternity. So, good use of it is, I think, the best stewardship. Psalm 62 verse 10 says, "Trust not in oppression, and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase," yes, here is an interesting thing, "if riches increase, set not your heart upon them. There is an opportunity that you may increase your riches." And I hope that the Lord will give that increasement in your life so that you can serve the Lord out of the abundance from God. However, issue is, if riches increase, set not your heart upon them. The love of money is the root of all sins. I have hardly met a person who lives above the level of the greed for money. It's the love of money does not discriminate any individual whatsoever. It doesn't matter whether that person is a head of the state or great religious figure or very noble man, scholarly person, lovable and affectionate man. It doesn't matter. Be careful. The Bible warns us of the danger of greed. Second, the Bible commands us to stop stealing but start working. Work, right work ethics can deliver us from the temptations of evil, stealing. So Ephesians chapter 4 verse 28 says, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." It's quite a number of elements of lessons we can find from this verse. So the person who is stealing must stop stealing. He should not steal anymore. But instead, he begins to work. So through his work with his hands, with a purpose actually when he's working, in order that he may give to a person who may have genuine needs. By working during the days when we have opportunities to work and to save for the future, we may prepare for our rainy days. We do not just use up everything that we gain. Proverbs 27 verses 23 to 27 says this, "Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds, for riches are not forever," says. "And doth the crown endure to every generation? The hay appeareth, and the tender grass showeth itself. The herbs of the mountains are gathered, the lambs are for thy clothing, and the goats are the price of the field, and thou shalt have goat's milk enough for thy food, for the food of thy household, and for the maintenance for thy maidens." Well, work or labor is a divine appointment Some people have an idea that because man fell into sin, so God cursed the man to work. No, the thing is a result of God's curse is not work itself. Work was in existence even before Adam and Eve fell into sin. In fact, Genesis chapter 2 verse 15 says, "And the Lord God took the man and put him into the garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it." That is a hard work. It is more than a gardener's work. I'm not sure how big Garden of Eden was, but you know, I cannot handle the small pots outside. And the Garden of Eden must be huge because there are all kinds of animals, and it must be a difficult work. And so work was there. However, Genesis 3:19 says, "In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." In other words, the added part to the work was pain, suffering, because of sin. But the work itself was designed by God for the person in the time of his innocence, when they did not commit the sin. Proverbs 10:4 says, "He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich." And the Bible commands us to be content, contentment. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 to 9. You know, we read those verses for responsible reading tonight. It says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition." So we are to be content. The Bible commands us to be frugal. Maybe God gives us riches, but if we are not frugal, and we are using the resources and riches that God has given to us, like flowing stream, you know, running streams and flowing waters, then obviously we will not be able to enjoy it. And I thought this is quite interesting verse. John chapter 6 verse 12. In fact, here in this verse, Jesus performed the great miracle of feeding a lot of people. That once after everything was done, everybody ate and so on. John chapter 6 verse 12 says, "When they were filled," so everybody was satisfied, "Jesus said unto his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost." Isn't it interesting? He's the owner of the whole universe. He's able to multiply the bread and fish whenever he wanted. But when once after everybody was satisfied, Jesus spoke to his disciples to collect all those leftovers so that nothing is going to be lost. Frugality is a good way of living. Proverbs 21 verse 20 says, "There is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up." Then the Bible commands us not to bring brethren to the court. Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 to 9 talks about certain brothers are taking other brothers to the court. And which verse is that? Let me just quickly point out one particular verse. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 7. "Now therefore there is utterly a fault among you, because ye go to law one with another. Why do we not rather take wrong. Why do we not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? So, in fact, there is a basically, clearly, damage done to a person by another brother. But here, Paul is saying that we'd better take those wrongs and defrauds by our brethren rather than we take them to the court. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 verse 6 says that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified. So it seems that when we say that we must take the defraud from our brothers, those wrongs done by our brothers and so on, it seems that there is no justice. It's not fair. You know, he has done clearly wrongs against me, and I understand that he's a professing believer. I understand that he's a born-again Christian, but he has defrauded me. It's a sinful thing. Therefore, if justice must be served, then I should be able to take this person to the court. But what God is saying is that, you know, if that person is a brother, do not take such a case to the court. Why don't you just take it? Then right after then, in fact, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 6 says, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of all such. What God is saying is that, leave the matter with me. Leave the person with me. And I am the avenger. I will take care of the justice matter for myself. That is even more fearful. Which justice is going to be harsher and more severe than the justice of God, the person who is all righteous? The Bible commands us not to take profits out of others' miseries. When someone is in deep trouble, and that person cannot but maybe sell or put something up for sale with a ridiculous price and so on, and we just take advantage out of it. Maybe someone will say that is a good investment, but I'm not sure. You know, I think we are not to take profits out of other people's miseries. For example, if there is a famine, and maybe grain prices are going up and so on, and so you are a wholesaler of all those crops, and if you just withhold those crops for a while, you know that the profits will be a lot. In the meanwhile, crop prices are going, and rice prices are going, and poor people cannot afford to buy the rice, a bowl of rice for their necessities. And we are so happy, and we are excited with the thought that we are making great profits and so on. The scripture says, don't do it. Proverbs chapter 11 verse 26 says, he that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him. Do not take profits out of somebody's miseries. That is not good. We'd better not take it. The commandment not to steal is a law to love our neighbors as ourselves. We honor and respect their God-given rights for their ownership. Stealing is not just against the physical properties, but also against anything that deprives our neighbors of their rightful ownership. You know, I think stealing can be done against somebody's mind and somebody's values and somebody's spirituality too. In addition to that, this commandment also urges and encourages us to do our duties toward our neighbors whose needs have not been met. The commandment also teaches us about our fundamental attitudes and work ethics in our workplaces and business dealings. So we have to have clean hands in our transactions. We are not supposed to cheat anybody. At the same time, that is only a negative side of the commandment, but positively, we should be able to actively look after the needs, the genuine needs of our brethren. And by doing that, we are fulfilling the commandment of God. Okay, let us look to the Lord in prayer.